My name is Pastor James May. Morning. I'm sorry that we're starting a little bit late. There's this guy in a white robe who was going on and on and on during the sermon. I don't know what he was talking about. in Africa, it's quite common that the sermons can go for 1 hour or 2 hours. And I was just warming up, and then I looked at some people and were dozing, and I figured it's time to stop. Save the rest of the time for talking now. So I have two presentations, and actually it's going to be a little bit confusing for myself because I made the presentations in Nairobi, Kenya, but when you're traveling with six kids, you have so many things on your mind because you're going away for 10 weeks. And I had gotten everything on the plane, and of course the most important thing is to take the passports and the kids, or the kids and the passports. But we got all of them on the plane. And then the first flight from Nairobi to Amsterdam, as we were just arriving into Amsterdam, I was thinking, maybe I'll change some things in my presentation. And I checked in my bag, and my external hard drive was not there. Sitting on my desk in Nairobi, Kenya. So I had to have the guys try to send me some of the pictures, and I'm going to do the best I can. I have two parts of the presentation. It's supposed to be a half an hour each, but now... because that guy was talking so long, I don't have time. So the two parts, I'll tell you. One is just an update of some of the work that was going on. And then I had a presentation for home life in Africa, because some of you might want to know what's it like, what's our home like, what do we do there. So maybe I'll do a short part of the presentation for the update, since you receive the newsletters and information on where we're going. And then I'll move to the home life so you can see pictures on that. Is that right? So the first thing, as I mentioned in the sermon this morning about Reverend Samuel Atunga, so this is a picture of him. I just wanted to mention in case I didn't get to it. You know, his contribution, he was really helpful, a faithful worker. And as I said in the sermon this morning, maybe the desires and the needs in Africa are different than they are here, because as I was saying, death is so much in your face. I mean, there's so many people dying in West Africa where we first started in 2006. If you remember, I had mentioned a few years ago that 50% of the children don't reach the age of six. And this is how much the death is just with you. And then, of course, you know, adults die of different things. So the question is always there, what happens when I die? And also as people get older, or if they are sick with whatever the sickness is, whether it's AIDS or malaria or if it's cancer, things like that, the people, I mean, they suffer in the house, and it's the responsibility of the family to take care of them, as it would have been, you know, 100 years ago in America, or in you go back in Europe and things like that, that's how it used to be. But I think because, it's just my opinion, you can disagree if you wish, but I think because death is so sanitized in America that you don't think about it, and maybe the desires are somehow different. But when the death is always there, people want to know what's going to happen after you die. But for him, and also for many Africans, the most important thing is, how do I get to heaven? So just as it was for him, the most important thing to have the Lord's Supper, the last thing before he died. This is what they want. So you are extremely a great benefit to them when you enable me to get to the different places to baptize, to preach, to administer the Lord's Supper. Because you never know when your last hour comes, and it's really every day like that, life in Africa. So, I mean, if you give someone eyeglasses and you give them mosquito nets, okay, those things are nice, but, you know, my family members are dying. What do I tell them? So this is the most precious and important gift. So on behalf of them, they're eternally grateful. And it's always hard for me to leave any place when I go to teach, because every month it's a different place that I'm teaching in Congo, in Sudan, Rwanda, Zambia. Just last month I was in South Africa a couple weeks ago, and then in Burundi. And every time I go there, they say 2 weeks teaching is not enough. we need more and more pastors. We need more and more people who can give us the gifts that Jesus gave behind. The gifts that Jesus left behind was when he said, go therefore, make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and teaching them to observe everything I've commanded you. So you have the baptism and the teaching there. But also when you read in the book of Acts, you've been reading through the book of Acts, that the first thing that the apostles did is that every time the people came together, they were devoted to the apostles' teaching and to the breaking of bread, Lord's Supper. Because they want to know that Jesus is inside them. So if anything happens to me, that Jesus is living inside me, that death cannot hold me. So that was the most important thing for their family. This is from Samuel Atunga's home. They don't have funeral homes. I've never seen a funeral home in Africa. Funerals are done at your own home. So this is part of his house is on that side. And there's a field here, so the casket is here. And some of the family members is where we had the service. And this is his wife, Gladys. She's turned away in this picture and the kids there. But then even for the funerals, for the burials, there are some cemeteries in the big cities, like Nairobi. But since Pastor Atunga was from the western part of Kenya, in the western part in the villages, they don't have cemeteries there. So this is his home. He was actually fortunate enough, he had a good salary because he was working for us, so he was able actually to build a home. But then Samuel was buried right there next to the home. I think for me, this was probably the most difficult thing. I preached at the funeral service, which is hard, but the hardest thing was just to be there while they're burying, and everyone stays there. You can't see in the picture that everyone is, surrounded here. And then the wife is sitting in the house watching as they bury. This is how closure is done. This is just how it's done there in Africa. But we also thank you for the support for the medicine. Most people aren't able to buy the cancer medicine, and we tried, but the detection was very late. For his liver cancer, and at that time it was too advanced, and it was not able to cure it. So the geographic area where I work, I've mentioned sometimes before that I'm working in 20 different countries in Africa, but I thought maybe you don't understand the size of how big Africa is, because most people think Africa, well, that's like a country, right? Well, this is a geographic map to scale, and this is how big Africa is. So this is how you fit United States here. You could fit United States 2.5 times in Africa. So inside the continent, you fit Africa, China, India, East Europe, there's the Western Europe, UK, all fits inside the continent. That's how big of area where I'm trying to work and trying to get more missionaries to work with me. You may have heard Pastor mention that we have one student, Jonathan McCall, at the seminary. So we're hoping that Jonathan, when he finishes his studies, he would come and help us out. So then we only have two people covering this area. But you can see, if we had 100 missionaries, it wouldn't be enough. And the people are, yes, there's all these health issues and health problems. And you see on the TV all the time, people are saying, oh, we need to get a cure for malaria. We need to get a cure for AIDS. You need to get a cure for the drinking water. And In small part, we try to help those things. But even if there were cures for all those, we'd still die. Just as here in America, you have all these advanced medicines and we still die. So the gift that only the church can give is the gospel. All the other social agencies can't give that. So we're very thankful that the congregation here at Bethlehem, and I'm very proud to say this is my home congregation, that you help and support us to give the gift that the world can't give. The people really appreciate it. Let's see. These are some different places where we taught. So this is in Zambia. We're not the only one teaching in Africa. There's a lot of liberals coming. The ELCA and also Lutheran Church in Sweden. they've really been coming more and more to Africa, as our organization, Lutherans in Africa, has been teaching more. They don't like what we're doing. They don't like people that we're teaching them the Bible. So they've really been coming with a lot of money and a lot of influence to try and teach them that, no, you need to have women pastors. So we had a seminar. That's what the book is. I don't know if you've ever read this book. It's Women Pastors with a Question Mark at the End of It. It's a book. It's published by CPH. It's a collection of essays studying the question of should the church have women pastors? And what is it at issue, and what you see in what happened in ELCA, ELCA, and what happened in Sweden and other places, is that the issue is not women. That's not the issue. Women are extremely important to society. They're extremely important to the church. And even myself, without my wife, I couldn't do the things I'm able to do. But God gives us all different roles. I can't be a mother. My wife can't be a father. Even though you're trying in America to do these things. It's not going to work. Two men aren't going to make a baby. We all have our different roles, huh? And also in the church, the Bible says that a pastor should be a husband of one wife. And this is just what the Bible says. So it's not a chauvinist thing, but it's just a different role thing. And what I'm saying, that the issue is at stake is the Bible and not women, is because once you get the people in the church to say, oh, well, the Bible was wrong in this point about women pastors. Oh, you know, Paul, he was a male chauvinist. He didn't like women. That's why he wrote that a pastor should be a husband and one wife. And it must have been also Jesus, too, because all the apostles were all men. So Jesus, wait a minute, wasn't Jesus, or isn't Jesus the Son of God? But anyways, but you see, the same way the devil is working now is the same way he worked in the Garden of Eden. What did Satan say to Eve? Did God really say? Yeah. So it's the same thing today. The liberal churches are trying to get you to question, is the Bible really true? Did God really say these things? Or was this just men and we can change it? So once you change women pastors, then the next thing is the abortion. The next thing is the divorce. The next thing is the homosexuality. So you see, once you take out one page of the Bible, well, why not two pages? Why not three pages? Why not four pages? So these are one of the things that they were struggling with. And in Zambia, they asked me, which one is true? Because these people from Sweden came and told us that if we start ordaining women, they'll buy us all cars. Really? They buy them cars if you ordain women. I mean, is that really not the devil at work? That if you reject the Bible, we'll give you goodies. So we went through this, and after going through it, because it's a collection of essays, then the people said, no, now we understand that these liberal churches, they're not even Christian churches. They might have crosses outside, but they're not preaching what Jesus preached. Because it's not only the question of the women pastors, but they change everything in the Bible. You know, ELCA also denies creation. They also deny virgin birth. They also deny the miracles. You know, they have very few pages left in the ELCA Bible. But what the people in Africa want to know is, what did God say? And they really like studying the Word of God. So the result is that they've put this issue behind them. It's in their constitution now. They're not going to have women pastors. This is from a wedding in Congo. There was some men who had gone to the seminary and they wanted to be ordained, but they wanted to have their weddings before the ordination. So we had weddings on one day, two weddings. You see two couples here. This is Daniel and Gustav. They got married one day and ordained the next day. So I was also there for the ordination. This is putting the albs on them after their ordination day. And then also when I was there, another thing. So when I mentioned thank you for helping people to hear the Word of God, we also do care about people in many other ways as well. You may have heard that we had one man, his name is Adolf. He is an evangelist in Congo. And what had happened to Adolf is that when he was younger, much younger, about 10 years old, his mother had brought him down to Brazzaville. And Brazzaville, there's Republic of Congo, which is a foreign French, a former French colony. And on the right side is the Democratic Republic of Congo. It's a little bit confusing because they're both called Congo. But the DRC is the former Belgian colony with Mobutu, if you remember any of that history. No. Anyways, he is from the north, and his mother had come down for a Christian rally that they had, and they're on a boat, and on their way back, they were getting onto the boat, and the river was very crowded, and there was another barge that was approaching their boat, and it was raining. And Adolf, since he was a young boy, he had lost his balance, slipped down, but on one leg. One leg was still on the boat, and the other leg went down. At the same time, the barge came and cut his leg off. So he's been on crutches from that time until this time. But now in Brazzaville, there's a clinic, a prosthetics clinic. So also part of the donations that we received from Lutherans in Africa, we used it, and he said because one thing he would really like is to be able to walk with his own leg. So we got him all measured up. It took some time. I think a little bit longer than what it takes here. But this man, he actually studied in France and was able to measure a leg for him. And now Adolf has a leg. So that's thank you to you for helping to make that possible, because these things, they're not able to do them themselves. So he's quite happy that he can throw his crutches away now. This is back in Zambia, another seminar there. We did on the Formula of Concord. How is it, the Uji?
It's right there in the pot.
Okay. So how do we do this now? I'm going to switch presentations. I don't know if we can do the hokey pokey in between. But if we move to the home presentation, if I can switch presentations, for those of you interested, my wife made African porridge for you to try. It's called uji. Yeah, uji is very good, and it's actually what I have most mornings. It's a millet porridge, and there's milk inside. And to help the Americans, we've added some sugar to it. So it's in the pot here. You can actually it's drinkable. She put enough water in there, so it's drinkable. So you can just for the next couple of minutes, if you want to get up. In the pot there, you can just put it in your styrofoam cup. There's a ladle, and then I'll switch presentations. So if you give me 3 minutes, you can take some porridge, and then we'll continue with Home Life Africa. Okay, so we have to dash out the door in a couple minutes, so I'm going to try to push through. If you want to take some more porridge, you can, but for me, I'm going to keep talking up here. So this would be a common market. Not in Nairobi, Kenya, but this would be a common village market. So this is what I was saying, is a common village market in Africa, not a market in Nairobi, Kenya. In Nairobi, Kenya, it's a city of 4 million people, so we have skyscrapers and supermarkets and things like that there. You may even seen on the news when they had the Westgate Mall bombing. We had a mall bomb there, so we do have malls there. But when you leave the city, it's just back to normal Africa, back to normal villages. So this is where you would buy your things. When I go out and teach, I usually live in the villages and buy food from markets like this. Also in Africa, they like to eat bugs. So we have very colorful bugs to eat. And I did tell you that there's in that porridge that there's no bugs. Not this one, different one. Yeah. But the last time I was here in 2012, right when we went back to Kenya, we had to switch our residence because in Nairobi, the city is just growing so rapidly. In the Western world, the population is decreasing, but in Africa, it's rapidly increasing. So the average person has anywhere 4 to 6 kids. Some families have many more kids. So our rents, when we arrived in Nairobi in 2009 to 2011, it doubled twice. Doubled twice. And now the place where we're staying, we have 1 acre of land. It's kind of big, but it's because it's not only our home, but we have a big place that it's 2 homes, and then there's a converted garage, a 2-car garage that is the chapel. So we have the translation center, 2-car garage is the chapel, and our home. And even that, for that plot in Nairobi, Kenya, we pay $3,000 per month in rent. Per month. Yes. Yeah. Because you see, Nairobi, Kenya is kind of like the capital of Africa. So all the businesses, there's over 6,000 UN employees in Nairobi, Kenya. It's the headquarters for Coca-Cola, for Africa, for Toyota. So all these companies, they have their bases there, which is another reason why Somalia and Al-Shabaab, they like to attack it because there's so many Westerners there. Because of this also, it's... the economy in Nairobi is very expensive. So if you compared it, so Nairobi would more be like a city like Chicago or Washington, D.C. So how much would rent be in Chicago on 1 acre of land? Yeah. More than $3,000 a month. Yeah. But anyways, this situation is not sustainable. We can't continue to be there. I mean, when I go on a teaching trip, I can teach 30 to 40 people for a week-long seminar, provide their food for them, provide their lodging, everything, for $4,500 for a whole week for 40 pastors. So we're almost losing a whole seminar per month because of the rent. So that's why we have this capital campaign. If Pastor, I'm sure he's mentioned before, we're trying to buy land outside the city where it's not so expensive, where we could have 10 acres of land. And we're going to have a cooperative education center there where we're going to invite seminary students, people who want to be pastors or people who haven't had any training from countries where they have no seminary. There's still many countries that do not even have a Bible school, an entire country, no Bible school. So, I mean, they want to have pastors, and instead the West, I know you're kind-hearted and you want to help, but the majority of churches are giving money for social things, like all these clothes and medicine and other material things, while at the same time the churches, they don't even have pastors. Or if they have a pastor, he's not trained. And if the pastor is not trained, what do you think he's preaching on Sunday? This is why Pentecostalism is rampant in Africa. They're all, because they're mixing Christianity with their tribal religion. So they're praying to the ancestors, give me a vision that I can preach on Sunday. So it's a different way of deviating from God. And you also see now, this is how Catholicism went from being biblical to having the worship of the saints, because they did the same thing when they went into the barbarian region, into Germany. They were also worshiping the ancestors. But in that time, the Catholic Church allowed it, and then they brought it into the church, where you prayed to the saints instead of praying to the ancestors. Now the same thing is happening in Africa. So now we're trying to prevent that situation, but we need more workers, and we're trying to be the best stewards possible of the funds that you give. I know that you give a lot of money, and I'm not saying that you don't, but instead I'm saying it myself, I'm putting it on myself, we need to find a better way of using those resources. And in my opinion, $3,000 per month in rent is not the best use of it. So if we can buy a piece of land, which, you know, the land is ours, then we can have the students come to us. And if we're farming that land, then we don't even have to pay for the food either, because we're farming that food and we feed them the same thing that we have. So this is what we're working towards. And I'm hoping that when I come back 2 years from now, for sure we'll have the land bought. So hopefully we'll have some things built as well. But anyways, we moved from one mission center to another. This is the old one, and we moved to a different one. And this map, I wanted to show you, it's from our kids' school. So our kids go to an international school, and on the first day of this year, they had a map where the kids from the school, wherever, whatever country they're from, they put a little sticker where they're from. So these are the countries and the places that our kids are from. So Nairobi, Kenya is here, the green one here, and then these are all the other countries of the world. So our kids have a true international school. Just a picture from their school. This is where they eat. They eat outside in a thing called a banda. But you can see the more than half of the students are from Africa. And then the other are from countries, USA, from Italy. There's a lot from Korea, Australia, other countries. And here... I'm sorry? It's an American school, so it's taught in English. Yeah. It's also American curriculum. Actually, because the Nairobi is so international, they do have a German school. They do have more than one, actually. A British school, they have a Swedish school, whatever country you want your kids to study that curriculum. Our kids go to an American Christian school. And they also had one day where they had a... Rhino Run, Run for Dignity. So most times the handicapped children in Africa, they're just kind of ignored, sidelined, pushed to the side. But this school, the Christian school that our kids are going to, they're partnering with a handicapped school for handicapped Africans to help them have a school where they have dignity. And we had a Rhino Run to raise support for them. So this was from the run that Tristan and I did together. He beat me. And also they have dances there. So Maggie had our first dance this year. So if you were worried that my daughter was being sheltered, she's not. And these are our friends. Maggie, who are your friends there? You can tell them. Stand up. You tell them, speak in a loud voice.
This one's one boy, my best
friend. One boy? Not one boy, but you say pronounce it one boy.
It's W-A-M-B-U-I.
Mm-hmm.
This is her twin.
Where are they from?
From Kenya.
McKenna and one boy are from Kenya. Yeah.
And they're twins.
Yeah.
And this is Geneva. She's from Australia.
And Geneva's from Australia. Yeah. Oh. When we opened our Christmas tree this past year, Tina found a present behind. With mice living there. We were wondering where the mice was coming from. But this is in the work center. Oh, there's Sophie falling asleep in the catechism.
That was all of us.
All the time. Where's this, Tina?
That's the crocodile or
alligator. Where is it?
Mamba
Village. Mamba Village. Okay, so when you visit us, you can play with alligators. Just like a raccoon. Raccoons have sharp teeth. And they have rabies. That's dangerous. So sometimes we don't have a car to get the kids to school. So they take camels. Lots of giraffes there, ostriches. And there's also there's a beach called Mombasa. It's about an 8-hour drive from our home. So when we try to get away once a year, we take a few days off when we stay on the beach. And the kids get to go on camel rides, which is pretty fun for them. This Indian Ocean. Warm, but it's a little dirty. But also at Christmas time, we have a big feast for all the staff. So many people think it's not just me over there with our family all by ourselves, but we have lots of workers who do different things to help us out. We have a bookkeeper, we have a cleaner, we have translators, we have other pastors working with us. And these guys, Kazim and Chipkoni, they help in the garden. And Paul is a security guy. And we made a big Christmas meal and invited everyone into our home. So this is our kitchen there. Yeah, it's a nice one. And our dining room. So they had this all the staff and their families. Yeah. During Advent, Christmas party. If you want to add any comments, Tina, you can chime in. But sometimes in Africa, this is what it's like, even in the supermarkets. Even though we're in Nairobi, Kenya, sometimes you go to the store and this is what you find. I can't explain it. I get frustrated by it, but most days there's food there. But sometimes it's just runs out. Tina got jealous. Yeah. This is a problem that we had with you. I suppose you have flooding also here in Ohio. But what we have is we only get water, if we're lucky, we only get water once a week.
What?
Yeah, that's it. So we have these big tanks. This goes in the ground, but actually it ruptured. They got a hole in the bottom. So when I was digging on the other side of the house, the whole thing leaked out, and it was ruining the foundation. So I had to dump out all the water with buckets, pull the whole thing up, and then try to glue it back together, and then put it back in. But this is how we get our water, and it comes in. It's dirty water, needs to be cleaned, needs to be purified before drinking it. So we have this big one, then it pumps to the smaller one, and then goes up, so it comes into the house. But there's also many weeks when the water doesn't come, and it's not because of a shortage. We have plenty of rain in Nairobi, but when the rain doesn't come, then we have to order it from people who have boreholes. But then we have to pay 10 times the price. So instead of paying $6 for a load of water, we have to pay $50. Guess who owns them? The politicians. Yep. So when it comes to be campaign time, the water shut off. When it comes time to send their kids to school, the water shut off to pay the school bills. This is what we have to deal with. This is Naivasha, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is in Naivasha. Went hiking with the kids. This is a crater lake. So a crater made this. A meteor made that. But also, that this park that you could just walk in and with the giraffes and other animals. One night I had made popcorn for Tina and I. We were eating, and then I didn't clean up the pot. And in the morning, I went to clean it in the morning, and this is what I found inside. Well, the chickens were happy. I gave it to our chickens. And then some of you may have heard also that Matthew got his teeth knocked out. Wherever he is, he's downstairs. So on Easter Sunday, the kids were playing with a toy parachute. So it was covering them, and they didn't see. And it got closer and closer to this wash stand that's outside. And he was running after his sister, didn't see, ran right in the top teeth. Six of them knocked out. And because it was Easter, all the dentists were closed and also closed on Easter Monday. So I couldn't do anything. I had to wait till Tuesday. And his face is all swollen up and we were quite worried. So we also thank you for your prayers when these sort of things happen. So now to see our yard, we're trying to do a small scale of what we hope to do later on. So we have banana trees here. These are all banana trees. This is what we call in Swahili, it's called sukuma, but in English it's kale. So kale is quite common to have. So each day we just go out and pluck leaves. We have usually for lunch, Tina and I, we have ugali, sukuma, and some beans. It's a pretty common lunch we have daily. And then here, this part of the garden, we have put this in thirds. One third is for chickens, another third is for tomatoes, another third is for things like cabbage and rhubarb and other things. And then also in our yard, there's no city plumbing, no city infrastructure. So all the sewage waste, they have these two tanks. One is for the dirty water. On the other side of his house is for the clean water. So we're growing broccoli here. And then here is for the cow. We have a dairy cow. That's for our broccoli. And that's after the lettuce is grown. So this is in between seasons. So you can see all the cabbage growing there.
Yep.
Yep, especially Tristan, he likes it a lot. And these are all cucumbers. And this is, we're growing potatoes vertically. If you've grown potatoes vertically, have you done that? Yeah, you can. If you plant your potatoes here, when the plants gets about 12 inches long, you just add another tire and some soil, and you keep on adding, and the whole thing will be full of potatoes. So instead of using the soil out horizontally, when it can be used for other things, you could plant potatoes vertically. No, yep. I'm trying to be a good steward. I'm showing you I'm a good missionary. So these are our cucumbers. We pickle them, make our own pickles. And these are the two containers where we have all the books that we've published and that we distribute. This is when we bought the calf in January. So she's now due in December. So then we'll start getting, yeah. So we'll start getting some milk, hopefully, starting in January. Yeah. This is when we were building the shelter for the cow. We call her Mansiki. In Finland, you call your cow Mansiki or Mustiki, strawberry or blueberry. So ours is obviously called strawberry, Mansiki. Lots of cucumbers, there's the potatoes up closer. So this is the dirty waste water. This is the front of the yard. And here, do you know this one? This is native to the America. Chia. Chia is actually a native plant to America. So Native Americans used to take the chia seeds in a pouch with water as they went around during the day. Yep. Yep. So chia, they grow up, and then there's a stem on top with purple flowers. And then after the flowers get dry, then all the seeds are in there. So your mom eats chia seeds? How does she eat them? I eat them I put fruits, mangoes, and pineapple, because we have lots of mangoes and pineapple, with yogurt and chia seeds. That's for breakfast, if I don't have uji. And then we have bay leaves and parsley. And these are cherry tomatoes. More lettuce here. This is dill for our pickles. Hot peppers. Rosemary, and some more herbs and spices on the other side. We need to go. She's going to pack the car. So there you can see more of the hot peppers. These are really nice ones. I wish I could have brought them, but you're not allowed to carry your vegetables into America. And there's our watchdogs. Samson and Lila. So then also, my wife is a very good European to make her own sauerkraut, squeezing up the cabbage with the salt, and also made her own banana bread with her own bananas. So, it's our boys in our backyard. Okay, well, I apologize, but like my wife just said, we need to run because we have a plane that we need to catch. But it was good to be here with you, and there's going to be actually 2 weekends that I need to also go to California when the whole family doesn't go, and my family, probably 1 weekend they'll go to Strongsville so they could see the people there, but then maybe the other weekend they'll come back here and then you could ask them more questions. I wish I had more time to respond, but I could maybe take one or two before we close. Yeah.
One question that came from the congregation a week or so ago, Pastor May, is they were wondering, what is the thing that you need the most in order to be able to continue your ministry in Africa like you are now?
Yeah, the thing we need most, I didn't show the other presentation, the whole thing to the end. Maybe I can just click on it. But when I said that death comes anytime, we just had a lot of, you know, difficulties, you know, anywhere from losing limbs to liver cancer to malaria. I had malaria two times this past year. And also sometimes we find these. If it bites you, yes, you would. Let me see if I can... Oh, there it is. Yes. It's a black mamba. So this is the seminary in Sudan. In we call in the room at the end is Dr. Giesler's room. Since he's the one who's furbished it the most, but it's quite a nice room because it has mosquito screens and a door that blocks the bottom. The room next to me does not have that, and that's where Reverend Dachi stays. So one night I was in my room reading, studying, preparing for the lessons for the next day, and I heard all this rustling and throwing things around, and I thought maybe Reverend Dachi had fallen down, but he had seen a tail go underneath him when he was reading, and he thought it was a rat, because next to him is where they keep the vegetables. They thought the rat was getting to her. But they said, that's a really long tail on that rat. So he put the flashlight underneath, and this is what he saw. So yeah. So no matter, yes, the money helps us enable to get to the different places and organize seminars, but no matter how much money you give, if I get bitten by one of these, the money doesn't help. So please pray for us, especially for our safety. So really, the prayers is the most important thing, but also the donations are extremely helpful because the people are so appreciative. I mean, they really want to have Lord's Supper. They really want to have Bibles to hear the teaching. It's the most important gift. These are some mosquitoes in Bukoba, Tanzania. This is sometimes what you find in the road. A tanker was falling off the mountain. Yep. And imagine if I was coming on the other side of the road, coming this way when he met him. Twice, you see, it's a different vehicle. Same mountain, same trip. So these are the things that I go through on both sides. We're also making our own solar panels. So I'm also going to try to be energy independent. We're going to have our own borehole, so we'll have our own water, our own garden. Okay.